Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
All right, welcome back to the House of Mystery. And as we said earlier, we have an incredible guest here. We have someone that's been in the police negotiation for the Las Vegas Police Department, and his book is called Held Hostage, and the author is Dennis Flynn. Thank you for being here, Dennis.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So Dennis, now let's talk a little bit about your history so people know who you are and where you come from. So maybe give a brief outline of the jobs you've done.
Absolutely. I spent 30 years with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. As you can imagine, it's at Sin City, a city that never sleeps. So the escapades of others are always on display. Had a chance to be the strip commander and be in charge of the police operations up and down the Las Vegas Strip. But truly what was the most rewarding was the 18 years that I spent being people call it a hostage negotiator, because it sounds sexy, but the truth is it's more crisis negotiations. Mm-hmm. We typically deal with people that, are suicidal, or they're trapped, in a residence because they have warrants, or they're wanted somehow and they don't want to come out. That only changed probably in the mid 90s to that title, because, although hostage negotiation is what we do, not only for Las Vegas or nationally, but also internationally, only about 5 to 7% of incidents are truly hostage.
Wow. Interesting. So what kind of other crises would there be?
It can run the whole gamut. Most of the time, most people can deal with any type of crisis that occurs. Some people are more well situated to deal with things, but some people, they might have some mental illnesses, of course, which can cause them to have more problems. But typically, for what most teams throughout the United States deal with are people who their normal coping mechanisms just fail. That they can deal with a crisis. They can deal with they came to work and their boss fired them, and it's heartbreaking. It's tragic. But most people can deal with that. Where people typically have that problem is that what we call that double whammy, where they come home and they tell their wife that you're not going to believe this, but I just got laid off at work, and she said, well, then it's probably a bad time, but I'm not in love with you anymore, and I'm leaving. And
oh,
so,
wow.
You know, these tragic events that occur, or, you know, that they just been in a bout of depression, and they just can't see a way out. And to them, all it is about is just stopping the hurt. And so they don't see the people that care for them, or they really believe the people that do care for them would be better off if they just weren't part of the world anymore. The combat vets that come back and they have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and just don't know how to cope. So those are the type of people that we will typically see in the suicidal or on the barricaded ones. You know, this is the person that robbed the bank, and the witnesses pointed out which way he went, and the police find his car out front, and they saw him run in the house, and he knows if he comes out, he's going to go to jail. So he says, I'm not coming out. And do the cops really just want to rush right in there? He's got a gun.
Right.
Can we resolve this peacefully?
I wonder, how did you get into doing this kind of police work rather than just, being on the street or being a regular detective?
Well, I'm not the biggest guy in the world. I stand a whole 5'5" and a half. I throw that half inch in because when I was a kid, they used to pull my arms and legs to think they could make me taller. So I'm not a big man.
Yeah, welcome to the club.
Yeah. So, as you can imagine, in policing, when you show up onto a scene, we all typically start out, and I think this is true for most police officers. You know, you go through the academy, and they teach you how to, resolve situations, and you get this false sense of bravado of what a big man you are. Well, that badge when you come out, that thing's the size of a dinner plate, and it weighs 50 pounds. And you've got to, you're going to do what I say, by gonad, or because this badge says so. Well, you learn very quickly. You can't whoop everybody. And especially when you're a little guy, you get tired of getting socked in the mouth. So it sure is easier to learn to talk to people. And when you think about it, that's what we're supposed to do anyway. Try to resolve it that way. Of course, there's going to be some people that it doesn't matter what we say, they're not going to listen. Of course, that's why we have the tools and the personnel to deal with that. But just learning to talk to people and treat people and fair and let them have their say. I just found that worked well for me.
What's the process you go through? How do you find out about a crisis where they need you? Do the regular police call you in?
Yeah, almost exclusively, it's an on-call basis. There's the only one that I can think of offhand that has a full-time team is NYPD, and that's because they're more than 40,000 people strong. But almost every other police agency across the U.S., this is an ancillary duty. So you're a police officer assigned to a beat. You're a detective assigned to working cases. But you had a desire to get into this field, and they send you through a class. The average would be a 40-hour training class that they put you through to learn the nuances of doing it, and just how to use your voice and how to just talk to people in a different manner. So then, when these situations occur, typically your first responders, they'll try to resolve it, but they realize you get to a certain point, just like requesting a SWAT team. I think we have tried everything that we can. I think we're just going to need some additional resources. Not that they're better. It's just that they've been offered different training. That's all.
So when you first start this and doing this, how do you get over the nervousness of worrying about losing the person that's in the crisis?
Oh, it's hard. Let's make no mistake. It is hard because when your team comes out, and I say team because you don't do this by yourself. This isn't a crisis negotiation person. It's a team. because you need to have people that can fill you in on the backstory and give you all the information about what happened to the person and who their relatives are and get all that details. And then you need another person that's listening in so they can pick up little phrases that might have been said or can give you some things to say, because when you first start talking to somebody, you have nothing in common. And as you start talking after 4 or 5 minutes, what happens when you run out of something to say? And remember, this is the most important thing in current that person's life right now. So then to complicate it, like you said, the nervousness, when you get there, you bring out your special phone and you put your headset on, everybody's watching. So you just find a way to kind of get into that little zone and try to just truly empathize with what it is that person's going through and work together to try to see if you can't find some kind of peaceful resolution.
What was your most, I was going to say memorable, but I mean it in a, what sticks out to you most out of your years of working in this business?
Is just the sheer reward. Unfortunately, we don't win all of them. I wish I could say that we had a perfect track record. We do not. And the losses hurt. Police officers get very, very calloused. And as you can imagine, you know, that robbery suspect that we talked about that was hiding in the house, and you end up talking to him and he ends up committing suicide. It's very easy for your peers to say, he was a dirtbag, you know, this was no big loss. Well, you know what? When you started talking to him, you started developing a rapport and a bond, and you realize, you know, this is somebody's kid, and those losses hurt. And so that's one thing that sticks out. But I'll tell you the other part, more importantly, is when you get somebody that's truly at the end of their rope and you hear just the horrible situations that they've gone through, and you talk from that person who is suicidal, they're in there with a gun, they're on top of a building or a bridge, and this isn't a show. This is truly that they want that pain to stop. And through the efforts of the team, that you get that person to walk out safely, that never gets old. You don't forget about those. It's just an incredibly good feeling. It makes you realize why you do this.
You know, so what happens after that? You know, when they walk out the door and you've been successful, what happens to that person? Do they get arrested? Do they get help? Like, do you follow up on that, or do you never see them again?
It depends. Unfortunately, we've had repeat customers, which is why we don't lie to people. You know, one of the phrases that is used in hostage negotiation is, why lie when the truth will be sufficient? Most people, besides, if you lie to them and they realize you're lying, you've lost all credibility. So what happens is certainly dependent on what situation we're called out to. If they're a suspect in a crime, it's very honest that we'll tell them, we were called there, we don't know what's happened. We certainly we're going to have investigators that'll want to hear their side of the story. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very true. That's very true.
Is there one specific instance that really stands out to you, a successful one that you really, really, every time you think about success, that this one pops into your brain?
Absolutely. There's many of them. The one I can tell you about, a shameless plug for the book that I had written, we were fortunate enough to have a volunteer videographer come out to a lot of our events. So there's several photographs from the scenes in these chapters, but one of them was a gentleman that was from Mexico. He had an addiction to methamphetamine problem, and he was abusive to his wife. And it was on Christmas night that he had, it was a long story, but basically he had battered his wife, and she was just waiting for her opportunity to call the police. She had called 911, and he took her cell phone and smashed it. Well, when the call goes through, we got a location on it. So when the police go out there, they just think that this is for a, you know, a 911 hangup, which are very, very common calls that a lot of times it's just a misdial. When the police cars show up, that's her chance to get out. She grabs the kids and she's running out the door. He realizes, because he knows that he's in trouble and he had been previously deported, he realizes that when he gets arrested, he's going to get deported after he serves federal prison time. And he had a baby, his youngest one that was still in the house. And he grabbed the baby and he grabbed the pistol and he said, I'm not going to jail. You're going to lock me up. You're going to put me under the jail. I'll never see my family. And then you're going to deport me back to Mexico. And there had been a lot of misunderstandings in previous cases that he had. And you can certainly understand his position. And again, with empathy, doesn't mean we agree with them. Doesn't mean that what they're doing, I think, was right. It just means that we can kind of understand the position that they're in. And he was walking around with his 18-month-old child in his arms, 2-year-old child in his arms, and he had a gun. I don't think, in this lifetime, will ever realize how close to death he became. Because as a SWAT commander, this was conversations that we had with the SWAT commander. If he makes any kind of sudden move and that gun comes up towards that kid, we're going to end this problem because they cannot take a chance of that child being harmed. You know, if you wait too long and he kills the baby, then what do you do? So you talk about a pressure cooker, and that we were able to finally speak some probably just some common sense into him. And, of course, after time's on our side, because as time starts wearing on and they see that we didn't run in and do some kind of assault, you know, hopefully you get a little bit more of a trust. And that's what we started getting with him, and just make some allowances with him. But we were able to get him to finally walk out with the baby, and everything was resolved peacefully.
That's great. Did you ever, after even a successful one, what sort of emotional sort of come down do you have to go through? Do you need a minute?
absolutely. You know, there's that old thing that we all learned in school, that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So if we were all even keel, and when we go out to one of these situations, your emotions jump up, you know, like a mountain peak. When you're done, you do not come back down just to normal. Mm-hmm. You're going to have that equal opposite reaction, that you're going to have that mountain peak below. And it takes time to let those emotions subside, that adrenaline, everything that your body goes through. And especially if this takes a bad turn, and unfortunately we've talked to people or been standing there while they've jumped. And of course you have some self-reflection of, was it something that I said? Could I have done this? You know, the woulda, coulda, shoulda game.
Yeah.
And so it does. It causes heartache, and you do need that time. So typically, especially if it is a bad outcome, we'll get a hold of their supervisors and send them home. And of course, in the old days, when we first started, when you would have something bad happen, what did the old timers do? They brought us to the bar, and you drink away your sorrows. Well, we all know now that when you add alcohol onto a depressing situation, you're just making it worse.
Yeah.
So I wonder now, do you find a big difference or common crises for either men or women?
I can tell you that there was myths that they say, you know, women won't shoot themselves because that's a common thing that you'll hear about, suicidal things with females, because it's more of a vain issue. I can tell you from our experience, that's not true. We've had just as many females with pistols as we have with males. But we do end up dealing more with males than females. We jokingly say it's the he's. We always talk about the he's. Now we say the she's make the he's do it. but it's the he's. But I know that that's always tongue in cheek, and you know, we, so please, I hope your listeners can at least get a smile out of it, because that's all it was intended to do. But as far as commonalities, you know, we typically would see your people that they just don't see any future. A lot of times, like, you know, with the suicidal people or even the barricaded folks, they just don't see a future. Now, your hostage situations, this is something that's almost always spur of the moment. This is the guy that was robbing the pawn store, and the employees pushed the silent alarm, and the cops showed up out front, and they realize we're caught. I'm just not going to come out. So, gosh, these guys must be our hostages, and we can bargain with them. And we want $1 million, and we want an airplane, and safe passage. And as time goes on, most people realize that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I realized in my own life that's not going to happen, $1 million in an airplane. not to make light of a horrible situation, but it's low-hanging fruit.
Yes, it is.
Wow. You know, write a book. You'll make a million. Children. How is that handled?
We don't have very many juveniles that we deal with that are the actual suspects or subjects. We just don't have that happen very often. Unfortunately, they are normally the pawn in these situations. So it's very common to have the kids involved in it. The most typical ones that we deal with are she decides that she's going to leave the relationship, and he takes that old adage that if I can't have you, then nobody can. And the child becomes just a side player in this, that they almost view as a piece of property.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Do you find any good representations of the negotiating police on TV or movies that you could recommend?
Well, sure. I mean, the one that we require.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Our officers that are interested in doing this, that we require them before they even come to the class, a movie that, of course, none of the younger generation would know, but Dog Day Afternoon.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yep, it's a wonderful movie of how when people think about negotiations, formal police negotiations is actually a relatively young art. We've only been doing this since about the early 70s. So this isn't like a very well-oiled machine as far as time, tested. Now, of course, negotiations go all the way back to biblical times, but using them in policing just typically didn't happen. Dog Day Afternoon was just a great example of mistakes that were made, and that was all based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
So was the movie with Kevin Spacey and Samuel L. Jackson, The Negotiator. That was another one that was based off a true story of things that actually happened. The art of negotiation is obviously intriguing, but to make good movies or make good television, they have to sensationalize certain things. So there's some things that just won't happen. If they've ever seen the movie The Negotiator at the very beginning, so not to give a spoiler alert, that Samuel L. Jackson goes inside where the man has his child hostage. That's TV. Those things just do not happen. It is, crisis negotiations 101 that you never, ever exchange one body for another. You just do not do those things.
Yeah, it's just not safe.
Well, not only not safe, it's just it brings too much other problems into the equation. There's just certain things that are absolute do's and do nots, and that's just one of the do nots. There's lots of television series. If you had a chance to watch anything on Waco, they've done a mini documentary on it, mm-hmm. also based off very, very realistic events. And also shows you the complexities of these things because, through all these incidents, whether we like them or not, of course, we can always learn from them. So David Koresh, who was the leader of the cult in Waco, of the Branch Davidians, his was a very spiritual nature. That's one of the things that become very, very difficult. I always like to say, try not to ever get into arguments about politics or religion because everybody has their own opinions. And so with the Waco incident, they brought in true biblical scholars. And of course, just like you can do in any religion talk, you just put your own spin to it. That's not really what that testament said. And so you find yourself in that spinning wheel cycle.
So have you analyzed Waco? Where do you think things went wrong there?
Oh, I can tell you, in my personal opinion, it was a horrible lack of communication between the SWAT team and the negotiators. We get tied up into one team has the primary, and they failed, so now it's the next team. So what I mean by that is, if I'm talking to you on the phone and after 5-6 hours, well, this isn't working, so now we send the tactical team in. Well, that should never be like that. It should always be done in conjunction with. So in the early parts of the negotiations in Waco, Texas, they were able to make a great deal of progress, and they got a lot of the children and women out of there. Mm-hmm. The problem is, most people have no idea what we do and how we do it. And it's just a different way of talking to people. Well, the tactical team, they weren't very happy with some of the talks that were done. And so as an example, even though that David Koresh and some of his, strong supporters that were there with him, even though they would make these concessions, when the negotiators would go off, and go home for the night, and everybody's supposed to be getting rest, the tactical team said, you know, it's probably a better idea if we keep them up. And so they would play loud, blaring music at them. Those old psych ops, you know, they would play music of, not music, but sounds of rabbits being slaughtered. You know, something that, of course, is just grotesque.
It's torture.
Sure. But then when the negotiators would come back and they start talking to them, how do you think they're going to respond?
Right.
So you had one hand had no idea what the other hand was doing, just some very, very poor examples of cooperative leadership. And, well, then, of course, we saw how it ended.
Now, when you have you ever had to do a bank robbery?
Yes, we've had a bank in Las Vegas where the guy went in and said that he had sarin gas. You know, that brings all kinds of complications because now you have to have, you know, a hazmat team there, because although you don't believe in your heart that he does, what if? So, and then whose jurisdiction? You know, it's in the you know, city limits, but it's federally insured. So do you want the FBI to take it? And so there's just a lot of complexities that you have to work out, and hopefully you have good relationships ahead of time so that when that incident happened, you're able to work it. We've had that. We've had a pawn shop robbery go bad. And of course, what's inside a pawn shop?
Yeah.
More guns. So when we got him surrounded, you know, it's pretty alarming when he takes eight customers and puts them all up against the glass. That, you know, that makes you realize that you are playing for all the marbles on this. We've had another guy that ran a barrier at Nellis Air Force Base into one of their very, very secure areas and claimed that he had bombs inside his moving truck. People like that, I mean, they are, you know, just a blink away from, you know, someone ordering a sniper shot, because can you take that risk? You know, what if he does have that? And the exposure and the, you know, the danger that they put all these other people in, not to mention that you were at a military installation.
I guess the mass shooters, like the one you had in Vegas from the hotel there, they're not really people you deal with too much because they pretty much kill themselves, don't they?
Yeah, almost the vast, vast majority are white males that when law enforcement responds and they realize they're cornered, they'll commit suicide. That's the vast majority of what happens on these incidents, which was the same for the Las Vegas October 1 shooting. So it's rare that people just give up. You know, and that's a whole different ideology. These are people that typically, they are, I know that the term will come across as crass, but they're the people that feel they're the born losers, that they've always been picked on, that they have very little self-esteem. So this is their way of giving themselves that notoriety.
It's pretty unusual. Do you have to actually get counseling yourself when you're going through these sort of years of this kind of work?
Well, we're very fortunate. Las Vegas added a psychiatrist to the team. The psychiatrist, their job is several fold, where, you know, if they start talking to the person in crisis, starts talking about medications that they're on, that doc immediately understands some of the reasons for those medications. They talk about different diagnoses. They can tell us what that means. If somebody has a borderline personality or they're narcissistic, what would be a better way to communicate with them? But and the added benefit that we get is those docs, they know us and they can see when they're interacting with us that we're acting out of character, and not uncommon for them to say, hey, let's go grab a cup of coffee. Let's go grab lunch. And just give you that opportunity, kind of like a peer support, where you can just kind of vent and explain, you know, the things that you're going through. So in an essence, yes, we do, but it's not very common.
What do you want people to get out of the book that read it? What do you hope that they walk away with?
Well, there was, you know, when I sat down to write it, of course, my first thought was to help the fellow negotiators from around the U.S. to kind of tell them about some of the incidents that we had. But also, I thought it would just be a good practice to add in each chapter the things that we did wrong. I mean, I think any person can stand up in front of any group or write down and say, did you see what we did? Weren't we cool? Aren't we the best? You know what? In the end, who cares? Tell me what you did wrong. Tell me some of these things so I don't repeat those mistakes. Because some of these mistakes cost people their lives. And I'm not too proud to tell you that we made mistakes and some people died. And those are absolutely awful. Of course, best of intentions, but you know, that doesn't bring that person back. So how can we prevent that from happening again? So that was one goal. And then another goal was, typically all your flashy movies or TVs. I mean, look at the TV show and the movie SWAT. Why do you think, Cops TV show has been on for 25 years? Because people are interested. How does this work? But I just thought, you know, this is an opportunity to let people see behind the curtain of what it is that we do, the lengths that we go through to try to save another person's life. And on face value, you might think this guy's an awful person, but you know, when you hear their situation, it's devastating. I mean, it truly pulls at your heartstrings, and to see all the things that we will try to do to save somebody's life. And I put in there successes, and I put in there in the book some that, you know what, we tried and it just didn't have a good outcome. Now, the truism is ultimately it was up to that person. If they decided that they were going to jump or they were going to shoot themselves, that was ultimately up to them. But when you're that person that's on the phone with them or talking face to face with them up on a bridge, when they take that ultimate act, you do feel a sense of responsibility. And to let people know that, you know, these things, and you had asked about our mental health for the police. You're seeing now that the police suicide rate has gone up drastically. And the average is an officer who has about 17 years on, who's in their mid-40s. Why? It's because of that cumulative stress. And these things add to that. When you see things that, you know, and this isn't a pity party. I get it that when you signed on, you understood what you were going to get into. But you do see things that, you know, you just shouldn't have to see. And how much carnage, how much trauma can you be exposed to until it has such a negative impact on people? And so by reading this, sometimes it'll give people just an eye opener of another thing that officers choose to get involved with, that it's the most holistic. It's the corniest thing that people say. Everybody says it when they go in for their police interview to try to get hired, and they say, why do you want to be a police officer? And the textbook's answer is, well, I want to help other people. Negotiations is all about trying to help your fellow man.
Did you guys come up with common questioning or techniques for certain scenarios? So like if you had, you know, someone that had a gun pointed at the head of a hostage, Is there certain points that you do every time, or is it just totally ad lib?
Well, there are certain things that we try to avoid every time. Certain words. Well, shoot. Well, no, probably don't want to say that. how about we just kill some time? You know, certain phrases we try not to use. We don't use the word hostage. Why reinforce it? You know, you want to personalize that person. I want to use Mike's name as often as I can so that Mike isn't an object, but it's another human being. So those are certain things for sure. But to answer your question a little bit better, it's almost the polar opposite, because everybody's situation is different. And this is their chance to tell their story. So our job, everybody thinks when they first come in to be a negotiator that, oh, this guy's going to do great because he's a great talker. You know, he could sell ice cream to an Eskimo. You know, that's not what we want. The opposite is we want somebody who's a good listener, because we have to be able to hear what their problem is, process it, and make sure they understood what that message was. Because we are all guilty. We all do it every day, that as you're talking, I'm trying to get you to hurry up to finish so I can tell you what I want to say. Because remember, mine's important. Well, we can't do that with these people. This is their opportunity. And not only that, but when they tell us their story, whatever it is, or their problem, that we have to make sure that we sell back to them that we understood it, that their message was understood, and that we don't try to go in and solve the problems, not right off the bat. Let's just let them, you know, throw up all that information and hear them. And, you know, something as simple as when they're talking, of active listening. Uh-huh. Really? Go on. Can you tell me more? And just let them experience that. And if you think about it, if you've been pulled over by a police officer when you got a, you know, you were speeding, you ran a light, did a cop ever talk to you like that? They don't, because it's very authoritative. We're in control and we will dominate the conversation. So just having this kind conversation and allowing them to do these things and to understand, they're probably going to call us a lot of nasty names when they're first on the phone and, you know, not respond in kind. It goes a long way.
Yeah, I would imagine. Do you have a website or a place that you want people to go and see any information, or a blog?
I don't, other than, like I said, I've been very, very fortunate. You know, the book Held Hostage has just received wonderful, wonderful reviews. And I think it's just because trying to be just honest and open, you know, not trying to sugarcoat anything, not trying to make excuses for why we didn't do that or we would have done this, but it was for this reason. No, just being honest. We made mistakes, and unfortunately, this one ended up costing somebody their life. And it's not that we put a lesser value on any life. Every life, we talked about that sanctity of life, how every life is important, every single one. But to allow people to view it or, you know, read the book or listen to the audio version and let them get their own opinion, and hopefully they'll walk away and realize there's policing in general. Listen, we have our fair share of bad apples, but there's bad apples everywhere. But the vast majority of people try to do the right thing, and that you do have groups of folks that have the title of a negotiator that, to the very bottom of their heart, will do everything they can possible to get a situation resolved peacefully, to get them reunited typically with one of their loved ones. And if they've made mistakes, that, you know what, no, it doesn't mean it's the end. Tomorrow's always another day. You know, and for those that are suicidal, you know, that's one of the phrases that sometimes we'll use. Listen, from what you've described, you've gone through a whole lot of horrible things. But try this. And if it does work, there's people that care. What's the very worst that happens? You don't believe me? Tomorrow's another day. You can always do this again tomorrow. And, you know, and all the people I've told that to, you know, I've never had to get a recall of somebody that was going to go jump again. Because we try to help them and get them in touch with the right folks or get them with a mental health professional, even if it's somebody that doesn't have the funding to do it. There's still organizations that we can get them in almost every locale, that type of help.
Hell yeah. Well, this has been an incredible show. We really appreciate you taking the time. We're going to have the book up on our website so listeners can just do one click and purchase the book. The book is called Held Hostage and Negotiating Life and Death for the Las Vegas Police Department. And our guest has been the author, Dennis Flynn. Thank you for being on the show.
Alan, Mike, I'm so very grateful, and thank you for taking the time to allow me to speak about it.
Thanks so much, Dennis. It was very, very interesting.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or show, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or show, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.